Remember the good old 1980s, when things were so uncomplicated. I wish I could go back there again, and everything could be the same.
You were also involved with Steve Strange and Visage. I think quite a few people are a bit unsure about Visage. Is it a permanent band, or was it just a one-off project?
It's not just a one-off project. It started off with some solo stuff I'd done. I'd done some demo stuff in EMI, some music, with Rusty. And I got Steve in to do some vocals because I knew he wanted to sing or be in a band. And we just developed the idea into bringing some our favourite musicians together, one of which was Billy Curry from Ultravox, before I knew him, and three guys from Magazine. And we did an album, and it's become incredibly successful, and we'll do another. But the lineup might change slightly, you know, the musicians, because obviously they're not available all the time to do the Visage album. They've all got their own projects.
Yes, and so it's not a permanent band, or...?
The nucleus of the band's permanent. You know, it won't change. Billy will always be involved. I'll always be involved. So will Rusty and Steve. But the other members, you know, might change around a bit.
This is Ace's Ogilvy,
Anatomy of a Song,
Fade to Grey by Visage,
with Billy Curry.
Hello and welcome to Atheistography and another Billy Curry interview and another Anatomy of a Song. So as I explained with the Vienna one, that it wasn't meant to be a Vienna episode, it just turned into that. It was going to be the new format, the 80-10 format, which became that and an Anatomy of a Song, Vienna. Then it became a two-part My Atheistography and Vienna. Now it's going to be a two-part 80-10. And Vienna. But while I was editing, I started editing it and I realised I had about 20-25 minutes on Fade to Grey, and I thought, well, this is good stuff, let's just excise this and create another Anatomy of a Song episode. So I've got four episodes out of what I've only spoken to Billy once. I'm going to get four episodes out of him. I'd love to chat with him again sometime, hopefully that we can do that, but yeah. So here's some of Billy's thoughts on Magnificent Fade to Grey by Visage. Enjoy.
The interview starts now.
Going to Visage with Fade to Grey, do you remember the very first creative idea that started that, the first spark of that song?
Yeah. What happened was I was working with Gary Newman in the beginning of 1979, and I'd come back from America in something like, I can't remember now, March, and it was a desolate time, but I'm digressing now. But I remember coming back to my flat in Herne Hill and thinking in the garden, where is it? I lived in this big house that was split up into flats, and I remember thinking, God, what are these clothes doing all over the place? And it turns out the landlord had come in and cleared everybody out of the place while I was in America, and the Irish guys that were on the top floor resisted and threw them out, and there's all these clothes all over the place. So I was in a desperate position. The landlord came and told me, he says, I want you out by such and such a time. So it was for me, I was skint and I needed to get a job. So it was crazy times. And anyway, I through working with Visage, with the Visage guys, I met Magazine guys, the three guys from Magazine, John McGeoch, Dave Formula and Barry Adamson, and they invited me to one of their gigs at Drury Lane. So that's when I was in the bar halfway through, this guy with Gary Newman introduced himself with Gary and said, would I like to do the tour? So that was great. Right, I'm on it. And so we were in this little rehearsal room at first called Tubeway Army, and Gary gave me a lift home in this lovely sports car. God, I should know what it was, but I've forgotten what kind it was. And he showed me the picture disc of Our Friends Electric, and I was going, oh, that's really good, really big as Banquet. They're really pushing the boat out for him, you know, with the eye on it and everything. And next minute, it was an absolute mega success. So bus forward from that, from little rehearsal room to being called Tubeway Army, to rehearsing just before the tour, up with the big risers. And opposite me is Chris Payne still, and in between me is Sed Sharpley. I'm on one riser. We're very, very high up there. And and that's that, you know, we were doing our sound checks. But it was quite a lot of rehearsing. He's quite a thorough guy, is Gary. And when we're messing about, and, you know, we like to mess about, keyboard players that can be seriously irritating, Chris kept... from a distance, because he had a Prophet 2000. I had a Prophet 2000 as well, which is the high strings that Gary uses in cars, that lovely string sound. Lovely string sound. And so lovely, it cost about $2,000. Now, it was a very expensive thing, so it was very exciting for me to have access to this. And so, right, here I am. We're having a break. Gary's talking again to the lighting guy we ended up using. Always lots of conversations with Gary, the lighting guy. And I look across, and Chris Payne is playing a bass thing with using a sound. I think it's a... some kind of brass sound. It keeps going ding 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 ding. And I thought straight away, he's a viola player like me, and a violin player. And so your left hand gets strong very early on, because you're playing all your fingering is done with your left hand when you're a violin player, you know, and your right hand is the bow. So he's got this fantastically strong action, which enables him to do ding 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 exactly in time.
And, of course, we had the classic bass riff, which everybody... I get asked questions about this all the time. People are saying, well, what did he do it on? What instrument was it? You know, they couldn't work it out. I said, well, originally it was supposed to be a Mini Moog, but I just had the Poly Moog, and believe it or not, the reason it confuses a lot of people, this bass line, is because it's not done on a bass or a bass synth. It was actually the brass setting on the Poly Moog. And I just played it in a low key. So, and in fact, it works better because I could spread the... I had more of a range to spread the chords out. Well, the Mini Moog is quite restrictive because it only has two octaves. So this is what came out.
Time 1979, you know, we were listening to Donna Summers on My Ghetto Blaster on the bus coach, and me and Sed are just really into this stuff, dancing, you know, in the dressing room. But not only that, but just the little bit of drum machine stuff coming in, you know, is like just creeping in, and automation was the thing. And I thought, first thing I thought was, that sounds like automation to me, because I was blown away when Warren got his drum machine and I heard a proper four on the floor. I was like, I want some of it, you know, and we did Quiet Man. It's just has its own unique feeling, a machine. So that's what led me to this thing that Chris Payne was doing, ding ding ding. I thought, that's brilliant. And then he played in these chords on the right hand, which were, I wasn't exactly taken blown apart by them, but they were okay. C, A minor, whatever. Being in Ultravox, they looked up to me at that time, which was really nice of them to do. I felt privileged to do it. I really did. But they did look up to me a little bit. So I did slightly turn my nose up to the actual chords on the right-hand side. It's something I wouldn't do. But there again, I just love this left hand. It was like somewhere along the line, Sed's put in this simple rhythmic drum machine thing, you know, which you remember from the song. From his Cube synthesizer, 808, I think it was called that, TR-808. And so great, he wasn't playing drums or anything, you know. And then I think just occasionally he tried it a bit, and miraculously it sounded like some of the Donna Summer's tracks that we're listening to, the same kind of tempo, you know, a really good feel. And I was really attracted to Sed's looseness and feel, because he carried a lot of Gary's songs that were actually quite harsh and cold, but he carried them along with this fluidity that he had. So that's that. So anyway, we're somewhere along the line, I said, oh, look, I've got some studio time at Martin Rushent's place with Visage. We're recording right then. Do you want to come along and we can record that? I can't remember whether it was after the tour. It might have even been in the middle of the tour, but we were quite vibed up because we had been playing live. And I was used to it because I've been doing some stuff with Visage, done Blocks and Blocks and can't remember what, Tar or whatever. So it was literally a prefab room. We were in a bedroom, and you'd go and record in the living room, and Steve Strange was doing some vocals in the bathroom. I mean, it was crazy. It's great fun, you know, do it yourself. But I went in there without any of them. But I'd got the same engineer. He turned out to be Hazel O'Connor's brother, would you believe? And I hadn't used him before, so I was a bit like, not sure about this. But he turned out to be really good. We got on very straight away. But I remember Chris saying, oh, God, the bloody Mini Moog hasn't turned up. And I was like, oh, God, here we go. But he'd got the Prophet 2000, which is Gary's, you know. These are really mint things, like 2,000 quid. I keep saying that, but 2,000 quid was a lot of money then. And he just goes, Chris, typical Chris, thinks off the top of his head, you know, there's no phase in him, which is great. If anything goes tits up on stage with Chris, he can get through it, you know, he's brilliant. And so he thinks, right, I'll just use another sound. And he comes up with this sound, which, oh, God knows, which was like some kind of, like I say, a brass thing, but played low down. He couldn't tell what it was. But it was like, it made you sit up. So when everyone hears Fate to Grey and hears that, you're like, what the hell is that exactly? You know, it's an interesting sound. It's quite pokey, you know. So it's like, away we go, right? And he does dum, 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 C minor, E minor, A minor, you know, great, fantastic. Does it a few times. And it's like, right, well, that's it. That's all I've got. Now, I just thought, right, my job now is to extend this, come up with some extra ideas and turn it into an instrumental backing track for a pop single. That's what I've been wanting to do for about the last 10 years. And here's my moment, really. It's the same when Ultravox got together later on. I felt like I wanted to make hit singles, you know. So here's my opportunity. So he finished on a doom, doom, doo, 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 doom. And I remember him saying, oh, God, here we go. I've got nothing else. I think we've got the drum machine just going on and on and on and on. No drums yet. And it's great. I just got inspired. And I said, all right, don't worry. Just do that four times. Doom, doom, doo, 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 doom. Doom, doom, doo, 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 doom, you know. And then on the fourth one, I had this idea on the last beat of the bar. One, doom, doom, doo, 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 doom. Bah. Bringing Sed in on the snare. The fourth beat. Da. And then bringing the four drums in. Doom, doom, doo, doo, you know. And then carrying on from there with a top melody, which would go dum 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 dum. It didn't have the triplet on it at first. It just had dum 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 dum. Right, so that's that. And Chris is looking at me as if bloody hell, I've heard people dumbing down pop music, but this is ridiculous. You know, it sounded like I was writing a nursery rhyme, because I also brought that melody in a bit earlier, just going dum, 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 dum. You'll hear it on the record. I brought it in earlier as a signal to say it's coming in later. But then this guy, Hazel O'Connor, starts messing around with the echo, because, you know, it's still the 70s, isn't it? You know, with a synthesizer, you put echo on it, especially the bass mostly. But I just loved echo anyway, especially what's it called then, the space echo. which is actually tape echo. I used to have a space echo. I think he was using that as a space echo. And he just accidentally latched onto a slow third. So instead of it going dum, dum, it was dum, 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 dum. So that was a breakthrough, because as well as that going on, you got that ding 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 against a ding 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 ding. So it was two fast moving four against three slow three, which was like pulling at each other. But I liked it, you know. So thank you, Hazel O'Connor's brother, really, you know, because my simple melody, which could have not been enough, was. But that's what you do with synthesizers, you know. In those days, you put echo on and reverb. I mean, you just put reverb on it, and it's like a lexicon reverb. It's like amazing, you know. So if you've got the opportunity, you know, not many people have got the opportunity. It's like, you know, through the eye of a needle again, isn't it? So that's that. So I bring back the so it's back to the beginning again in A minor. So he comes in with all his stuff again with the chords. So it's the same thing. But after two rounds of that, I go up to D minor, because I've hinted at going to D minor with this sort of drop down bit. So that's that. And I play right through to the end, but I come back to A minor as well. And that's it. That's all I did. But when I brought Sed in on that fourth snare, with his loose feeling, you know, it was just like heaven, really, because it felt just like the Donna Summers songs we've been listening to and dancing around to and playing on the coach on the Gary Numan tour. So we didn't really feel like we'd got a hit single. We were just having good fun, you know. We didn't really think we'd got anything. We were just having some fun with it, you know. But in the back of my mind, that's where I was at, really, thinking about writing hit singles. Because it was nice being in Visage, because that's what we wanted to do, you know. So anyway, we get that. But I mean, I've got a very, very strong memory of doing the soft ARP sound at the beginning. You know, I did a doom at the beginning, you know, a rising thing. I don't know if you can remember that. And then I play the ARP, which has got the French-speaking ladies talking through it. I enjoyed playing that ARP with the softer sound, with still bringing a harshness in, with feeling every now and again. Get too technical, but you know, it's nice, you can just move the knobs so you get a bit of feeling coming through hard a bit. And then when I finished it, I just left it going, press the ADSR to AR, which just means that it goes on for eternity, and just left the last note as it goes into that doom, 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 doom. This is before the big end section. So that was a nice feeling, because I remember we did let Martin Russian into the studio then. He knew I was the only one there, so he thought he'd be able to get away with it. And I remember Martin going, just saying, nice one. It's a really fond memory I've got. He's got a beaming face. And I remember him saying, nice one, which I felt really good about. Okay, so I do a mix. We do a mix and then go into the end room, the living room, and dance around, drinking, having a laugh, have a bit of a party in his house, which didn't go down too well, because he must have come along and disappeared again and we took advantage, you know. That's distant memories of that, right? But then, okay, come a lot further forward. We've got that. It's just banked there. I've got a cassette of it. And we continue working with I finished the Gary Numan tour. That's just sitting there. I called it Toot City because I was singing and talking along with it, making silly singing to it, you know, just having a laugh, dancing to it. But we hadn't got a vocal part. So it needed a vocal part. We needed a vocalist. And so I'm doing the Visage album. We're getting most of the tracks mixed at Mayfair Studios at South Morton Street with John Hudson. So we, Books Fizz lady was working at reception. Sorry, I'm digressing now.
You mean one, a member of Books Fizz?
Books Fizz, yeah, she was working on reception.
Was that Jay Aston or was that Cheryl Baker?
Sharon Baker, yeah. And then you can show that you think you know.
Okay.
She was good fun. She was very supportive. She liked what we were doing, but of course she'd got ideas for herself as well. No, it was funny. Yeah. So that's with John Hudson. And yeah, so we start, we've got these tracks, we're mixing them, and then it becomes pretty obvious that we're short. We need a track or even two. You know, it's that kind of an album where it's just literally being done without the help of a major record company. We're just doing it. And I think we're getting a bit of help. Yeah, this time we've signed to, we're with Chris Morrison, a manager, Morrison O'Donnell, and he decides, he likes the idea of Visage. We sell the idea to him and he decides to set up a production company and we get some funding from him. And the idea is that he'll sign it once it's finished, production companies do. So we got some funding. That's why we're mixing it, you know, but it wasn't finished. And so I said, right, okay, well, I've got this one track here. Look, do you want to listen to it?
Hello. The audio cut out here. He's talking about Midyear. And here he is.
I had heard the original track that Billy and Chris Payne from Gary Newman's band. Billy was touring with Gary Newman at the time when I was out doing my little stint with Thin Lizzy to try and generate some income to get Ultravox up and running. And they used to jam this thing and they recorded it when they got back and it was called Toot City. But as a piece of music, it was fantastic. And when we were doing the Visage album, I asked Billy what he was doing with this thing and he said, oh, I don't know. I said, well, give it to me and I'll see if I can write a melody and some lyrics for it. And that was Fade to Grey. But it was never mooted as an Ultravox track at all. But, you know, fantastic piece of music and an absolute joy to, you know, to get my hands on.
Because I was living over in Chiswick then and he was living in Chiswick and it was just like past the cassette. And he said, yeah, later on he said, oh, I really like it. You know, I did some interesting stuff to it. And I listened to it. And I just thought that's exactly what it needed, simple. And it was a melody in itself, which is a Midge trait. You know, it was a good melody. Very, very well done. I like the lyrics. And yeah, that's all it needed. God, I couldn't do that. Fantastic. So having had that, we could then play it to the rest of Visage and they were saying, yeah, let's do it. So that was good. And I remember just in the you know, the idea of the French singer, which was Rusty Egan's girlfriend.
Devenir écrit.
Going, that sound made a lovely flavour to it. It's just different. She was from Luxembourg, but, you know, obviously it sounded French. It was just different. It was like, God, what are we getting into here? It was just so refreshing.
Devenir écrit.
And I liked Steve's vocals. I wasn't there when he did them, I don't think. I was just soon after. He liked, some vocalists just don't like people staring back at them. Steve was one of them. And when you did, I think it was Dead Basic Studio, you had to go upstairs into the recording area and look at a TV screen. You know, it was all sorts of stuff had been done there. The Gary Glitter clap things there, you know, the wooden claps. They did a lot of Gary Glitter stuff there and Mark Boland. And so you're up in this other room and you just have to look at this screen. And I remember doing the violin parts because I got some ideas to do some violin parts at the end, you know, those bits that, you know, dum, 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 dum. So it's got a violin on again right at the end. It's a band, you know, there were seven of us. John McGeoch had played the violin and he was a bit taking the piss a bit, you know, but you've got to be thick-skinned. Warren and, sorry, not Warren, Midge was up for it. And it's funny, as soon as you pick up the violin, you know, you get these mixed points of view of, you know, for or against, but you've got to get through that. So I put that down and there was no tuning stuff then. You have to play in tune, you know. And yeah, it was good. Did one in a third above, and that was put in as well. But the main memory I've got actually is coming in and visiting to start to listen to what's going on. And Rusty were there, done some syndromes. So where I'd done that drop down, dum 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 dum, when it goes back to A minor eventually, there was this massive syndrome, rototom or whatever, that Rusty had done.
Yeah.
So it was getting sent into chart area. That's where I thought, you know, when you've got something like that, it was just getting backed up so well with Rusty doing these extra bits on his syndromes. Rusty and Midge getting stuck in, they were a combo. Very good combo.
But Fade to Grey is like such an iconic song, but hearing you talk about it, it's also clearly was a very important song in your approach and what was going to happen with Ultravox. And as you were saying, you wanted to write hit singles. Was that what happened with the Midge or Ultravox?
Me and Midge, we had that unsaid thing that's what we were wanting to do with Ultravox as well. So he responded when I gave him the tape for Fade to Grey. I mean, that's a great vocal melody and lyric he came up with. And this was the same thing with Ultravox. The first thing with new stuff we did with Ultravox was he let me step in. Well, it just happened. It wasn't like he'd let me step in. I did step in. It was I did the verse for Sleepwalk. Da, 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 da. And we were having a bit of a laugh, you know. I'd got that in my head from working with Gary Newman, you know. Practically everything I did on the Mini Moog was doom, doom. My conversation, doom, doom, you know. So here we go, but I wasn't doing it on a Mini Moog. I was doing it on the low end of a CS80. Oh, no, actually, I did it on the ARP. Yeah, so I was using different synthesizers to what I did with Gary, because, you know, I wasn't really a Mini Moog man anyway, especially after that tour. No, I'm joking. So that I got things going with Sleepwalk, and Midge just stepped in and did a good proficient vocal, and there we go. We felt like we'd got possibly a hit single as well. So, yeah, it did rub off on how things would develop with Ultravox later. But this was earlier on. This was more like, it was summer. It was sort of like June, I think, yeah. Because I remember we were there doing Visage stuff when it was summer, because Martin Russian had a pool. We were clowning around in the pool, especially the bass player of Magazine, God, I've forgotten her name, is the right laugh. And I got myself ridiculously burnt from being in warm water, and then, because it was a heated swimming pool, and then lying in the sun and burning my face, and then having to do Top of the Pops like I was some big, complaining because I'm like some big star. I mean, come on. It was great fun doing all those appearances on Top of the Pops with Two-Way Army and then Cars. It was really good fun. I mean, it set me instead for when Ultravox got on Top of the Pops. It was just really fascinating how Fate to Grey came together. It was obviously when things have legs and the feeling just gives them legs and they just... You know, I mean, we did the drum part pretty much in one take, I think. It was just like, I was looking at Sid as he was playing it. He was playing it in the room that we were recording. I mean, it was that basic. And, but you can do that, you know, you just have to organize yourself properly. And I was just watching him as he was playing it. It just said sharply and just got it. It just really had, and I was so into it because I loved being with a drummer like that. It was so nice for me to work with different musicians. I love working with Warren, don't get me wrong, but it was just such a nice change. You know, Warren was very straight back. He had feel, and don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking him, but he was a different kind of drummer altogether. So it was just different working with these different musicians. Of course, it was very odd the way it was taken out of the hands of Sid and Chris, and it was completely out of their hands then. I phoned Chris up and said, are you interested? Visage are interested in doing what we did, using it. And he said, yeah. So I checked with him first, but he was completely out of the picture. So was Sid Sharpley. Chris Morrison, our manager, and we made sure that they got some publishing on it. You know, so we split the publishing equally between me, Midge, and Chris Payne. I think Chris Payne gives some to Sid as well. Not sure about that. And so it was all okay in the end. You know, it was funny things, these, you know. It's and we signed to Polydor America. That's what happened. But I wasn't really signed. I was like, it was only Steve Strange that signed. I mean, this caused no end of problems, but I won't bother listeners to that.
This is the end of the interview. Thank you very much.
Man, Fate to Grey has not faded at all over the years. I think it's aged beautifully. It still sounds fantastic. So many thanks to Billy. And we will have the two-part 80-10 episodes a bit further down the line. Actually, the next episode will be an 80-10 to give you an idea of the format. It's basically a streamlined My Eatersography, so look out for that next. Oh, and I forgot to mention, the Chris Payne interview snippet in the episode is from a YouTube video on the Christopher Payne account called Visage Fade to Grey Explained. For 14 minutes, Chris explains his part in the making of Fade to Grey. It's worth listening to, so check that out as well. It's going to end with a cover of Fade to Grey. There have been quite a few, some interesting samples too. This one I quite like. It's an unreleased track from Kellis. Anything you like.
Hot damn, boy, I'll take you shopping, take you out to Compton, things that you been wanting. Nice things, feels just like a nice dream. Turn it on me, said it, give me anything. I'll get you anything you want. I'll get you anything you want. I'll get you anything, anything. Everything you need, I'll get you everything you need. I'll get you everything, 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 everything. Everything, everything, everything,
everything. I think that's quite good. I like that. I'm not quite sure why it was unreleased. And then there's this one, One Word by Kelly Osbourne, written by Linda Perry. A That's what he's thinking here, very similar. Even got the French lyrics, but not quite sueable at this point. But then the vocals come in. But initially wasn't even partially credited to Curry, Payne, Ewer. Seriously, they thought they'd get away with that. That's shocking. Luckily it was challenged and they got the credit, but man, that's bad, isn't it? Borrow but don't steal. Always give credit, kids. Instead, I'm going to play out with Visage, a 2014 orchestral version that Steve Strange did a year before he died, very sad, much too soon. And I believe this is the version that's played at the church as his coffin was carried in by Boy George and the Kemp brothers, amongst others, which makes it doubly moving. This is a really good version, so take care, hug your loved ones, and see you soon.
I like to see people looking original and individual and doing their own thing. Yeah, doing their being themselves. I did an interview last week and somebody was trying to make me say that I must make everybody say, well, you should do what, you should dress like this. I don't have a message for anybody. As long as people are happy, I don't harm anybody. I'm just being myself.
Feel the rain like an English summer.
Hear the notes from a distant song.
Stepping out from a back shot poster.
Wishing life wouldn't be so long.
We fade to grey. 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 We fade to grey.
Hey, all done. Thank you! He's talking about Midge-ur. Midge-ur. Midge-ur.
And here he is.
We fade to grey.
No, forget about that bit.
Welcome to 80s.
No, no. Hello! Hi, I'll say hi.
Hello! The audio cut out here. He's talking about Midge-ur.
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 He's talking about Midge-ur.
Midge-ur.
And he's talking here, about Midge-ur.
He's talking about Midge-ur. He's talking about Midge-ur.
Midge-ur.
Yeah! Midge-ur.
Say the whole thing. It's hard.
Hello! The audio cut out here. He's talking about Midge-ur. And here he is. We fade to grey.
I'm going to include this and I'm going to name you and shame you.
Hello, the audio cut out here.